What do you love about him?
Okay, so my favorite part of feeding Mama is not the cooking part. It's actually when I deliver the meals to the new parents, sometimes I have an opportunity to stand in the doorway and talk to that new mom, new dad, new parent. And that is the best part.
Welcome to Conversations with Your Chinese Auntie podcast. Your host, Patricia Peterson, has conversations with BIPOC folks about life, shares wisdom, and discusses their experience with topics like growing up in an immigrant family, racism, and the sense of belonging. In this podcast, we give voice to people of color and learn more about their lives. So join your Chinese auntie as she has compelling conversations with fascinating people. Without any further ado, let's dive headfirst into this episode.
My guest today is the founder of Feeding Mama, Mona Enting Stillwell. I first heard about Mona from my Chinese medicine colleagues and friends. Feeding Mama is dedicated to nourishing new postpartum parents with premium quality Chinese foods, carefully cultivated through the centuries-long sciences of traditional Chinese medicine. In Chinese culture and according to Chinese medicine, the first 30 days after giving birth are when your body is at its most vulnerable. Chinese elders often remind mothers to avoid going outside in those 30 days to avoid catching wind. And in ancient times, it was also considered a no-no to wash your hair. The practice is called sitting the month or 坐月子, so new moms can be looked after and recover from pregnancy and birthing. I really enjoy this conversation with Mona. Mona is fast becoming a dear friend and my lunch buddy. Hi, Mona. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you for the invitation. I was born Mo Enting, and we settled in Vancouver when I was three, and then when they put me into kindergarten, I think. It was run by a Catholic nun organization, and they insisted I choose an English name. They did not accept Enting as a valid name. And my parents let me pick my name. I was 5 years old watching a lot of TV, and I chose the name that I heard in a commercial about plumbing products. So now I go by Mona. My ancestry is Chinese and Portuguese via Taiwan and Indonesia. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I am 6 years post-menopause. So I'm fully in my crone years. I'm currently privileged to be residing on the stolen territory of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh, what was known as Vancouver. I'm currently running a company that makes organic ready-to-eat meals for people that just gave birth using over, 2,000-year-old Chinese prescription kind of like boundaries about what kind of foods to eat.
Yeah, Feeding Mama.
Yes. I forgot to say the name. Thank you.
Before I ask you to talk about Feeding Mama, but I would love to ask, because you share how your name came about, any regrets, or would you wish you'd come back to the Chinese thing?
That's such a good question. When I went to college, I met an Asian person who had retained their Chinese name, and I was shocked. I was seriously shocked. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is allowable? And I just felt the like ancestral pride for that person, like maintaining their ancestral name. And I had a bit of regret that I was forced to do this, but yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to weave in my Chinese name here and there, small ways, but yeah, it was weird because at home, my mom would call me by her nickname. She'd call me Ting Ting. So yeah.
But the reason I ask is because a lot of us, even immigrants, when we change, we would told that, oh, your name is too difficult to pronounce. I shared this in one of the other episodes. When I went to the University of Victoria, they said I should change Patricia to Pat Boone because Boone is part of my Chinese name. And this teacher said, if you take Pat Boone and you put it on the resume, you'll be more hireable. You'll be more attractive to prospective employers rather than using your Chinese name.
It's that belonging, fitting in thing, I think, that you've mentioned in previous episodes.
Mm-hmm. Because you've been here since when you were so young, do you feel a sense of belonging? Do you feel like you fit in to the culture, the city?
I mean, yes, and then no, depending on where I am in the city. I mean, I grew up in Richmond, so I know a lot of roads in Richmond and Vancouver. So there's that familiarity, gives you that sense of place. But as I've become more decolonized in my thinking, I look at place, like, although I'm familiar with it, I think about the thousands and tens of thousands of years where Indigenous people, like, this was their land, this was their home, these were their, you know, harvesting area. And but even that does not, I don't feel displaced by that. I feel like an honoring is happening by thinking in those ways. And it connects me a bit more to the land. I feel like that is respectful.
Please share with us about Feeding Mama, your hope for Feeding Mama moving forward or currently. As an ex-acupuncturist, I think this is such a great service for new mothers.
So the beginning of the story seems selfish, but then it gets better. So I was like 49 and a half years old, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm about to turn 50. And I was growing increasingly disenchanted with my dream career, which was being a software project manager. And I mean, I love working in teams. I like working with people who care about doing good work. And it's just more fun. I love being in a team environment and everybody working together. But I was recognizing that a lot of decisions about what project we were working on, what was more important, was driven by a profit priority, which is totally their purview because it's, you know, their company. That's what the stakeholders want. You know, makes sense. But I knew I could decide whether I wanted to be a part of that or not. And I decided, you know what? I actually have some financial privilege that I can decide not to. And then if I decided to leave a well-paying job with benefits, 6 weeks vacation, what would I want to do? And so I started to brainstorm a bunch of ideas, potential ideas. They're really not at all related to making meals. One was to was because my kids were little at the time, I wanted to take like upcycle vintage sheets from Value Village into like clothing for kids. That was one idea because I thought it would be good to not be wasteful. Another idea was to open up a daycare again because I couldn't find daycare for my kids at the time. And all the daycares have massive wait lists. So I thought, oh, well, this is a really great business when you know you're going to have a wait list as soon as you open up. So guaranteed revenue. And the other one was to open up a, like making videos for women-led tech startups. I know that's very specific, but I was in the tech sector And I also went to film school, and I was at the time making a documentary about a woman-led tech startup. So I thought, oh, these videos, which would be like explainer videos, what they call explainer videos, or like pitch videos. And also Feeding Mama was, it was kind of like added at the end, really. And the reason why I thought of it was because when I came back to work after having my twins, I was telling people about the postpartum meal service my mom purchased for me. And people said, oh my gosh, I wish that was around when I had kids. Like everybody was like saying that. And yeah. And so I wrote it down on my brainstorm list next to the used clothing idea. And then I did a matrix of like potential startup costs. Like, are you first to market? Like all these like startup evaluation things. Like, and I weighted it, and then Feeding Mama came out on top mostly because I'd be first to market. Like I would be an original idea in that I would be doing like a modified postpartum meal service. I wouldn't be copying the existing format, like what I received, which is, yeah. So it was more a cold calculation. But then as I started my path, I quit my job, gave 2 weeks notice, and then I started looking for women chefs, women Asian chefs specifically. And like, hey man, I live in Vancouver. There's a huge Asian population. That shouldn't be too hard. And it was tough to find an Asian female chef.
Wow.
Yeah. But then I eventually did. It took me about like 9 months to find somebody. And then I went through like a few different chefs. And then I landed on Karima Shalouf, became my like the main chef who helped create all these recipes that are gluten-free, dairy-free. They don't use refined salt or refined sugar. So instead we salt with organic miso and organic tamari. And tamari is just fermented soy sauce. And we sweeten with organic maple syrup. So she really understood the goal I was going with, and she was happy to play with the constraints. I think chefs actually thrive on constraints. I think we all do. So yeah, and that's part of how I started. But I did a ton of research about what the traditional Chinese postpartum food would look like. And I knew I really wanted to do something different. Usually it's like you get a container of meat, a protein, a container of vegetables, a container of rice, a container of soup. Like that's what I received. And then you kind of heat up these things separately and you eat it, and it's very filling. It's good. And I wanted to offer something more like everything in a bowl situation. But I didn't really, I couldn't wrap my head around it until around like 2019. I saw that some places were selling something like they call it a mackerel bowl or a grain bowl. And I'm like, oh, that's it. There's like a grain on the bottom. There's a big protein. It's grain, a grain veg, some other veg, there's some pickled things. I'm like, yeah, this is the form factor I want. So once I figured that out, then Karima was able to really run with the idea.
I always thought you cooked the food yourself.
Oh yeah, I cook it. But Karima came up with, she developed the recipes.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so great. I'm curious, it takes guts to quit your job and to start Feeding Mama. Was there like one particular thing? Were there a few signs? Because a lot of people are so afraid to make change.
I think after I started, there was a lot of coincidences and people coming into my life that really helped me. But I think taking that first step, the step off the ledge, off the cliff, was allowed the universe to say, okay, you're ready, let's go. But it was more, I was just really tired of listening to other people make decisions that I didn't agree with. My body just said, enough. You don't want to do this anymore. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore.
You listen to your body.
It was really, yeah, it was like an uncomfortable feeling. You know, in Chinese, there's that, I don't know how to say that word in Chinese. It almost sounds like rice cake. It's, no, I don't know. Anyways, it's like a very like itchy, uncomfortable feeling inside that I need to get out. I've always had that kind of like, get out, leave that job. It's time to go.
When was the last time that happened before you started feeding mama?
I left a job that was extremely toxic. And I'm like, my managers stabbed me in the back. They were friendly to my face, but then they'd say nasty things around my back. The managers would tell me one thing, but then they would change their minds later, but they'd not loop me in on conversations. I was sharing a room with someone that would get so frustrated, like they had definitely anger issues, and they threw a pencil in my direction. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is going on here? And this was like in the healthcare world. So it's like, oh my gosh. I'm like, no, gotta go.
Good. So good for you. Because I think oftentimes we stay too long because we're so afraid of walking away from something that seems like security, whether it's a relationship or whether it's a job.
I read somewhere that like Western astrology, Taurus people they leave things very quickly. Once they decide to leave, they're gone.
You're Taurus then.
I'm a Taurus. I haven't always done that. I don't think it's bravery. I just feel like I need to, it's all self-preservation.
Yeah.
So things that I've I'm just thinking now that have opened up for me since I took that leap of faith and started feeding mama was like, besides chefs, like figuring out and finding chefs, it was also meeting now a friend of mine, Mimi Young. She is a animist, intuitive spirit medium, and I've learned a lot from her, like about things from like spiritual things from my culture, from China, about the I Ching or the Tao Te Ching. And that's really informed like how I approach feeding customers, because just understanding like, so the food that I'm making sit within a prescribed prescription from traditional Chinese medicine, which says everything's got to be cooked. For one thing, you got to eat a subset of vegetables and meat that will nourish your body postpartum. Got to stay inside, keep warm, all that stuff. And with under that umbrella is actually like this ancient Chinese like spiritual thought, the I Ching, and including the Tao Te Ching. And I didn't realize that was actually, I was part of this tradition, and that's really connected me to like the esoteric part of my ancestry, which has brought me so much fulfillment actually. And yeah, I don't know. I just feel like I have reconnected with my ancestry when growing up, I wished I was white.
Oh, yeah, that's so common, right? Do you feel that with feeding mama, do you feel like this is something you would do for a long time? Or is there something you want to add some things to it? Because, you know, your mind is very intelligent. You know? It's like, are there other parts you want to make it different or bigger or better?
Well, I think you're very intuitive, Patricia.
Thank you. That has been said about me. Thank you very much.
Now that I'm like, you know, Chinese medicine, there's like this herbal prescription component to Chinese medicine. And so I don't use hardly any Chinese medicine in Lai Su because I was told by my Chinese medicine advisor that those medicines are too strong. And unless you know who you're cooking for, there could be adverse reactions. Anyway, so, now I have this interest in herbalism, as they call it in North America. And I'm really interested in like growing medicine plants and using it to in safe ways to, you know, if we have a sore throat or a cough, to go to my garden and pick something. Like self-heal is a plant that I have used recently for one of my kids that had a sore throat. So I've been growing a lot of yarrow and echinacea. I haven't used it yet, but I'm growing it. But yeah, I'm really interested in growing vegetables in general and in feeding mamas specifically. I did feel like bigger, like I'm like, oh yeah, franchise, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, no. I realize that it's like, this is a business born from my heart. And the feedback that I receive from ex-customers has been that they can tell that I put my heart into the food when they receive it. And I feel like that would be lost if it doesn't come from me. Yeah.
What do you love about it?
Okay, so my favorite part of feeding mama is not the cooking part. It's actually when I deliver the meals to the new parents. Sometimes I have an opportunity to stand in the doorway and talk to that new mom, new dad, new parent. And that is the best part because I just give them the space to, like, I ask them open-ended questions like, how are you doing? How is your body feeling? I don't even ask about the baby. I just ask about the parent because no one asks the birthing parent, the person who was pregnant, how their body is doing. Everyone's asking about the baby. And so I kind of want to be this person that's like, hey, I want to care about you, the parent who just birthed this human. How are you doing? And like giving them that unconditional support and love. And that's the best part of the feeding moment.
10 years ago, one of my girlfriend gave birth and she said the same thing with it. She said, everybody asks about the baby. You know, even with gifts. It's always, especially a baby shower, it's always something for the baby. It's very rarely that you get anything for the mamas or the dads, right? And for me, that was when I thought, oh, right. From now on, if I buy anything for friends who just had a baby, I buy it for the moms or the dads. Because the majority of the people are going to get the baby something. And when my sister was pregnant, she's like, how much clothing do the baby need, right? And they grow out of it so fast. So even if I buy clothing for, like, one of my girlfriends just had a baby in the States and I bought her a baby clothes, but I bought it for 1 to 2 weeks, not for like 0 to 3 months because she's going to have so much of that. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
I am curious, in another reality, what would you be doing?
Ooh. I don't know. I think I might still be trying to pursue my interest in filmmaking. I made one documentary and one feature-length film with my film partner, and that was very satisfying to be a part of. But it's so difficult to make a film in that there's absolutely no money in it unless Hollywood funds you. If you make it yourself and you put it on your own credit card, no one's going to give you money for that. Or if they do, like if someone picks you up for distribution, there's very little money in it. So
I don't think many people know about that.
Yeah.
Because people look at it and goes, oh, there must be a good payout.
No, not really. Like a lot of people make, like people coming out of film school, they'll make a lot of films because they're trying to build up a sort of like a resume of films and that they have the ability to do that. But really, I mean, the end goal is to get funded by a big company who doesn't care about making more money. And that's totally, you know, that's fine. But sometimes it's less about storytelling and amplifying voices that are often not seen in the cinema. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes I see things here and there, I'm like, oh my gosh, that studio is doing amazing things. Like the studio that made Everything Everywhere All at Once. They're called A24. And then they just recently released another film that was up for an Oscar, I think. Yeah, and that's, so they're doing, and it, usually it's Asian, South Asian focused films. It's really heartening to see that kind of work happening.
When you think about your life, are there any events that stand out that you think to yourself, oh yeah, those were impactful and those have made me who I am today?
Then probably would be when my Baba died when I was 15 years old, suddenly without any, like, no precursor, nothing. And I think that changed me in a way that I had, like, I think I have abandonment issues where I worry about abandoning other people. Yeah. And then interestingly enough, like, so a year after my Baba died, my mom remarried my stepdad, who I'm called Dad, and he was estranged with his kid. And it was just so interesting, like the themes that come into our lives.
So did he was estranged with his kids, and was he close to you? And you have a sibling, don't you?
Yeah, I have a younger brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My dad wanted to be close with his kids, but there was a friction with the mom of the kids, and that prevented contact to be possible.
Just now you talk about you're learning the process of decolonization.
Mm-hmm.
Just share some stuff about
okay.
that because a lot of my listeners also in that process.
Thank you for asking. I want to say it's not linear. And so my first job out of high school, I actually worked for an Indigenous advocacy organization. It doesn't exist anymore. It was a United Native Nations Society. And I used my BA in sociology to as a caseworker to help people apply for something called Bill C-31, which allowed folks to apply for Indian status under the Indian Act. And I worked with that organization for 7 years. And I left it just because I wanted to get into software. I wanted to make websites. And although I worked in an Indigenous organization for 7 years, I still had so much to learn. And I was privileged that I was able to hear about the 60s scoop, about residential schools. I never learned that in school, high school, elementary school. So I was aware of that. And I have to admit that I really didn't really think about Indigenous rights issues for a really long time, And really, honestly, not until I started feeding Mama. So funny enough, like as soon as the idea, like once I landed on feeding Mama as the idea, an immediate second thought immediately was, and I'm going to cry now. And I'm going to feed Indigenous families because I knew that this was a privilege, that I was going to be selling a premium product because it's not cheap, and that it was important to pay reparations and to support the community of those that I'm benefiting from, you know. Because for the longest time, I used to think, oh, I'm a Chinese immigrant. Like, I wasn't part of colonization. For the longest time, I thought that. I'm like, oh, I'm free from judgment. But we, like, my parents benefited from the colonization. Like, they could afford a place to live here because Indigenous people were, their lands were stolen from them. Only because of that, my parents had a, could come over. They could get a job, like, do all these things. So, yeah, so Feeding Mama really reconnected me to that point of view again of decolonization. Yeah. So from day one, I've been providing 5% of gross sales to an Indigenous organization. Yeah, every quarter I do make a donation.
Thank you, Padu.
Yeah, it's not an easy path. I have to say that one thing that I would let non-Indigenous people know is that if you want to work with an Indigenous group or an Indigenous person, that you need to create trust. And that trust doesn't come with just meeting someone for 1 minute. It takes months and years to create that trust. And so don't feel like, oh, no, it's over. That person's too, like, blah, blah. No, it's just how that trust needs to happen because of what's happened to their communities. They need to know that they can trust you.
So I came here in 1993. I did not learn anything about the 60 schools, residential school, until maybe 10 years ago when I did my own work on it. It was never talked about. Yeah. Best advice you ever got?
I don't know who told me this, but to trust myself and trust my intuition, trust my inner knowing. It was probably Mimi. Yeah, I'm a people pleaser, and so I always look outwards for approval. And so looking inside and having a relationship with me, first of all, and who I am, it's such a blessing to now, I'm not 100% there, but to be able to trust myself and trust my body when it's like, get out of there, or yes, this is a yes, do that, is such a gift.
Would you share how you started the process on that? Because a lot of people, whether it's because they've had traumatic events in their life and it's really hard to listen, to trust their body or their intuition. And I know everyone is different. Like for me, for example, I had to get a lot of body work done, therapy for me to learn to start to listen to my body. Was there anything that kind of helped you, works for you?
I feel like I remember the things that didn't work for me, but that doesn't mean it won't work for anybody else,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I think we just all have to keep trying. So I listened to a lot of meditation on the meditation apps and didn't work. But, you know, I'd find one person who'd say something and like, oh, that really resonates. And then, yeah, I know this podcast is not about Mimi, but Mimi really leads some great, like, inner exploration exercises, and I really gained confidence. And it is a confidence thing because, you know, when I first was like trying to like listen in, I felt like I couldn't trust myself. Because I think, oh, my mind's making it up. My mind's telling me all these things. So it's, and that is part of it, but also being still and being grounded helps. Having your feet touch the wood of your floor maybe helps. The grounding helps. Being in a safe space. I mean, I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize they need. And that is tough to do because a lot of us are in spaces that are unsafe. So hard to do, but a safe space where you can be vulnerable to yourself. Yeah, I can't really think of anything else but to try different things and to love yourself. I think that's really the journey I'm still on.
Last question. What advice would you give to new mamas?
Oh, new mamas. Okay. Like they've already had the baby?
or before. What? Because for what you do with Feeding Mama, what do you want them to know?
That they're not alone. That there are people out there, like family and friends, and maybe you need to be selective of which family and selective of which friends that you can be safe with. But there's other, what they call mother circles, that are held by doula collectives or midwife offices, just to find a space that you can feel safe and you can share common experiences. It is so important to feel safe in how you're experiencing postpartum and even pregnancy. It is so powerful to be in a room with someone else who's in the exact same month of your pregnancy or exact same month of, you know, 3 months postpartum. You're like, oh my gosh, we're all going through the same exact thing. And it's just so comforting to be able to like vent about certain things. Like, oh my gosh, I don't, like, regression again. Like, it felt like there was a regression every 3 months. They're like, oh, the 3 month regression. Oh, it's the 6 month regression. Oh, it's the 9 month regression. Oh my gosh. It's just never ending. And then, but you can complain about it with the other. You can like laugh at yourself and what have you. Yeah. And trust yourself. So I had twins as a geriatric mom. And anybody over 35 and is pregnant knows that they're called a geriatric. It's a geriatric pregnancy. And I was 47 when I had my twins. But it's so interesting. Nobody said that phrase to me, to my face. It's almost like I'm too old for them to mess with, maybe. I don't know. Anyways, yeah, trust yourself. I didn't trust myself because I'm like, I'm too old to know anything. I don't know it. The doctors know everything. And when my babies were born, one of them was a little bit lighter in weight. And she was gaining weight slowly, not what the doctors were expecting based on a growth chart that is put out by the World Health Organization. And so I would see these pediatric doctors and they're like, weigh my baby, measure my baby. And they'd say, so how often are you feeding your baby? And it would be, I'm sure they said it in a like non-judgmental way, but I felt very judged, and they'd suggest I go, you know, maybe you should try formula. And I don't know, it felt like a indictment of my ability. And like, this is proof that I am not cut out to be a mom. I shouldn't, I'm too old. But I didn't trust that, like, that baby, that lower weight baby is now like the taller and heavier baby. And it's just every baby has their own growth cycle. And I think I knew that inside of me, but I didn't trust it. Instead, I trusted a pediatrician, which, you know, I definitely want to consult, but trust yourself. There's so much, you know, your baby a lot more. You spend every single second with them. Like, you know them so well. So please trust yourself.
Trust yourself. What a great reminder. For many of us, trusting yourself can be a tricky thing, especially if you've had trauma in your life. So go slow. Find a therapist or body worker you trust who can show you that trusting yourself and listening to your body is safe. Then practice. Learning to trust yourself when you have never done it can be scary. Practice can look like slowing down, sitting in silence, and paying attention to how you feel in your body and heart. I spent many years ignoring my body and instincts. When I started the journey to healing, trusting myself and listening to my body meant slowing down, skipping a workout because my body was sore, or saying no to an opportunity and not bypassing the icky feeling in my body. Be kind to yourself. Much love from Yi, your Chinese auntie.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Conversations with Your Chinese Auntie podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. That helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Also, remember to sign up for our newsletter to receive free materials and updates. Links in the website, patriciapeterson.ca. That's PatriciaPeterson.ca. Again, thanks for listening. We hope you have a great week, and we'll see you in the next episode.